Unchurned is presented by Update AI.
They were spending the majority of their time on anything that related to an opportunity where they could close out revenue. Mm.
So growth, yeah.
It was account growth, and I couldn't fault them for that in that they have a huge revenue target to hit and they're rewarded on that, right? So of course that's going to take their focus, and there's a lot to work on there too. But
what was the loss in they're spending so much time on the growth part of things, which makes sense because that's where the incentives are.
Sure.
What was the impact of, I don't want to use the word neglect, but spending less time?
You've used it.
Yeah. I don't want to use it, but I've used it. Yeah. What was the impact of that though? The neglect on the CS part? Hey everybody, I am Josh Schachter, CEO, founder of Update AI, here with John, Mr. John Johnson, my co-host extraordinaire. John, say hi.
The one and only. Actually, not the one and only. I just went to the DMV and they had to scroll through 29 pages of John Johnson's to make sure that I didn't have any outstanding warrants before they could give me a new driver's license.
Do you have any outstanding warrants? Do you have any outstanding warrants, John?
Well, let's just say, you know, I didn't confirm or deny which John he was searching for. I feel like. So it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Like I'm on page 27 and it's like John Johnson, John Johnson, John Johnson. Like, well, I thought I was unique, but.
Well, Chrissy bailed on us, so it's you and I that are babysitting the house here. On President's Day, we're filming this.
I've been sitting on my couch all day long playing Zelda, The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening, for the last 6 hours. I dropped my kids off and I said, you know what? I don't want to do anything today. And then I got this little notification that says podcast in 10 minutes. And I said, shit, I should put on some pants.
I'm pleased that you did.
Nobody can tell, right?
Because it's true.
Here we go. Topic is whether or not John's wearing pants. That's been like it's a regular thing. So
It is. And so Zoe, now's our time to introduce you. I would like to introduce to everybody listening out there to Zoe Marshall. Zoe is the head of account management at Arbor Education, has a rich background in account management, but also in education. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. Zoe. Zoe, by the way, in honor of President's Day, in the United States, we decided to interview somebody based in London. So, yeah. Zoe, welcome to the show.
Really going to give us your perspective.
In fact, it was news to me that it's President's Day. Sorry about that.
That's right.
So, you know, Zoe, the first question we like to ask everybody, especially on President's Day, is who are you rooting for, Biden or Trump? No, I'm just joking. We're not going to go there. That's another podcast.
There's plenty of podcasts about that, to be honest.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I do want to take a moment, actually. Last week, we had Jess Cohen on our show. She was our guest. And Jess is Update AI's new head of customer success and community, and basically helping to shepherd everything now in my company, because she's amazing and so structured, and I love her. I want to give a little shout out to Jess, because she texted me a couple hours ago that her dog Fry passed away last night.
Oh, no.
And he was older, but not that old. So, it was something that I think was mostly unexpected. And it's really unfortunate. We're kind of a dog family here at Update AI. Like, most of our team have dogs. I've got my puppy that everybody's well aware of. And so my heart goes out to Jess and her husband and their other dog, who was out of the same litter as Fry, to the whole family. So I just wanted to kind of share that word of condolence. With that said, let's get into it.
The transition of the century.
Yeah, the transition of the century. Let's put Zoe on the hot seat. John, you want to kick it off or should I?
First and foremost, what I always love to know, how do you define account management? That's like the old, again, like coming, I've been in CS for 12 years, and before CS, it was always account management or these other kind of titles. And I always love, it's a little bit of a flashback, some nostalgia. So that, I mean, that's kind of where my brain has kind of been sitting since I got all of the prep work on you is, you know, let's hear a little bit about what Arbor Education is, obviously. And then I'd love to hear kind of what your breakdown of account management looks like.
Okay. I'll go with the Arbor Education bit first, and you can learn a bit about that, and then try and answer the $1 million question, which is what is account management? So Arbor Education, we are an ed tech company for a piece of software for schools at the moment in England, and branching out into the rest of the UK. We have predominantly a tool for schools to use and multi-academy trusts and local authorities to use that allows them to have insight and analytics of their student, their staff, their parent data, allows a school or a multi-academy trust. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, by the way, a multi-academy trust, but
multi-academy trust.
Yeah,
so makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go to Wikipedia halfway through this pod. Okay. No, I love it.
Also, John was curious why you said you're in England, but you're expanding beyond the UK. Aren't they the same thing?
So
not anymore.
England is part of the United Kingdom, right? So
that's right.
Yeah, Ireland, Scotland, Wales. I'll draw a little map after this, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, it's not a problem. I guess in your head, England, UK is just London, right?
Yeah,
that's fine. There's a little bit more to it, but not a lot, really. In terms of size and population, very small still. We have this piece of software that allows schools to really understand what's going on in their school. And then multi-academy trusts. So a multi-academy trust is a group of schools with a central body run often by a C-suite, operating much more like a business would, and allows that central team to have, again, that insight and analysis on what's happening across their schools. And so our platform will allow them to do that, and then they can make more strategic decisions on deploying resource and deploying staffing, looking at how their pupils are achieving, looking at attendance statistics, for example. There's also we have a tooling, so we have an app for parents to use to book their child onto a trip, make payments for something, get their child's report, all those kinds of things through the app. And so again, from a central level, for a central team, they can have that strategy and that drive to increase parental engagement with them and their school, their students. And ultimately, we're here to kind of try and boost student outcomes. So can we save everyone time? Can we make things slicker? And can we give everybody data at their fingertips?
So you're helping schools run, basically.
Right, exactly. And I think when I chatted to some of your colleagues, I was explaining to them that the tool we have is a management information system. The easiest way to describe that is like a CRM tool for a school and for a trust. It's there, like it's what glues them together. It's the central piece of data. Plus a whole heap more. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. You joined Arbor Education about 5 years ago.
Yep.
Was that your first job outside of education?
Yes. Yeah. So do you want me to give a bit of a rundown as to...
Yeah, because I mean, there's so many, like we hear it all the time, and I think for good reason, that a lot of people are trying to get into customer success or have been successful in CS or adjacent, in this case, of account management. Have a background in education. And so I'd love to make more vivid your experience coming from education into the business industry.
Yeah, of course. So I studied education at university and qualified to teach at the same time, left university, and I actually headed over to Germany and taught at an international school out there for a year, which kind of if I'm honest, just felt like more of a fun adventure kind of thing to do. You know, when you're 21 and, you know, do you want to just go back home and settle down into a job? I still kind of had itchy feet and wanted to do something more exciting. So I did that. And then I came back home and took up a couple of teaching posts back to back, teaching primary school. Enjoyed that, but was kind of always looking for like a little bit of something else. I really love learning. I really like being challenged. So yeah, love sort of that fast pace and learning and really was kind of lacking that in a school environment. So challenged myself a little bit, went and did a master's degree while I was teaching full time. That was kind of good fun and a good challenge. My husband was away studying for something else at the same time, kind of fitted in. And then I took on more responsibility in school when I'd done that. And actually, eventually, I ended up going to work for the local authority for a big local authority not far from where I lived and took on an advisory role there. So the role was very much about, it's really focused on special needs and children with various cognitive difficulties, and advising schools on kind of best practice, doing assessments, making referrals, and doing kind of like whole school training and a whole plethora of things that that went on. One of the problems, well, two problems for me there in my, you know, love of learning, love of, you know, pace, excitement, that I was kind of working for this quite archaic feeling system in a local authority. So that was a little bit painful for me. But the big thing that really drove me to the career that I'm in now was that one of the questions that I asked every school, every site that I walked into, when in short, they'd said to me, "Help, I don't know what to do with this group of children. They're not learning. You know, what do we do next?" The first thing that I always asked was, "Well, tell me what they can do." And 99 times out of 100, the person I asked, whether that was the head teacher, the special needs coordinator, the class teacher, whoever it was, they'd say to me, "Well, they can't do X and they can't do Y and they can't do Z." And I said, "Well, of course, right. I know that they're struggling with things, but if you don't know what they can do, how do you know where to begin?" And felt kind of sad, because to me that was the basics, was like bread and butter of teaching. But what became really apparent was that actually teachers really struggled to just get hold of that data, and they were so their days are such a whirlwind of so much stuff to juggle. They didn't have data easily accessible. They didn't have systems that were really simple to use. And they were just kind of getting blindsided by a load of things. And when something or a child didn't fall into the mold that they had prepared their day, their month or their year for, they kind of didn't know what to do. And so I kind of, you know, began this passion for data, for helping people to succeed. And that success piece is always running through everything, and found a job at Arbor, and there we go.
I love that. I mean, so I have, I've got kids, and we just left California, and the California education system sounded very similar to kind of what you're talking about. Is, you know, the not every kid can be treated the same, right? Sure. But also, I love what you said about like identifying what they can do. What are they good at, right? Yeah. And that's kind of like the heart of technology and what data is really good at. And yeah. I don't necessarily hear like that marriage too often, is like, "Oh, I'm an educator, so I want to go teach people how to do X, Y, or Z," right? Instead, like your perspective is so intriguing to say, "Well, let's start with what we do know and how do we make sure that everybody knows the same things," right? It's just the basic of customer success is starting with a success
mentor.
Exactly,
right?
And it's funny how I see so many teachers coming into the market because of these reasons, and they don't know how to identify those things. They don't know how to like say, "Oh, like I build a lesson plan so I can build a success plan," or whatever that analog is, right? Yep. But at the same time, it's starting with just do one thing well. Find that one thing and then move to the next thing and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And it's so funny when I, you know, being in like working with my kids who are in school And they're getting frustrated with like, well, we've got 19 apps and this, I got to check the scores over here and I've got to check the emails over here. And then it goes to a text and it's just so convoluted and it should be so simple.
Yeah, definitely.
How, what is your thought process? We'll get into let's dig into kind of the account management side and how you manage your customers and your bases, and things like that. How do you think through this really archaic, I'm only speaking on America's behalf, but our education system is fucked on every level, all the way up and down on so many areas, right? And I hope that yours is better. But you're walking into kind of a landmine. This is something that's so special and so important for so many people.
Sure.
And it's in the dark ages. So how do you bring light with technology and education and the things that you're passionate about?
It's a really good question. I think we see both the wonderful successes of that and feel the pain of that daily here. And, a lot of the time, not every time, but a lot of the time, we're potentially working with people who can be quite resistant to change. Mm-hmm. So, right, change management and the whole preparation for change management when implementing a new piece of software actually is always such an important piece, right? It's so important here. And we do sometimes struggle with people not necessarily wanting to engage, because of the sector that we're in. But this happens across any subscription service, right? Like somebody somewhere where you work says that you've got, it's a directive, right? You have to install this thing and you've got to use it. You have to buy into it. And people either do or don't. So I think whilst it's niche, it's also not, the problem exists across SaaS.
But it is more pronounced, right? It's like if you try to sell a sales enablement tool to a sales team, it's change management. So sure, they have to wrap their heads around this new product or platform, but they're incentivized to do it. And you're going to a bunch of educators who're just trying to go from, their first homeroom class to the last class of the day and keep alive.
Just make it through.
Just make it through and then work on their lesson plan for the next day and go decompress, right? So what are some of the things that you guys do, given that it is more difficult to shepherd people through that change?
Yeah. Good question. Again, we very much have to really push the benefits of the product, make sure that the consumers of the product are really going to understand what it is, really understand why they would even need to engage with it, never mind want to. And if we can hit them with that need. Now, I guess for most schools, they're already using a system like this. They're just using a much more archaic one. They're using a server-based system in the most part. So we're offering them a cloud-based solution. So that initial sell actually in itself is fine, because here's a cloud-based solution to do all the things that you're trying to do. And
they know it's better.
They know that bit's better, but really having to sell with a really solid story is really important, right? So they can understand. So if we can give them a story around, paint a picture of a child and how, analyzing behavior on attendance and behavior has allowed us to find a pattern that child is persistently absent on a Tuesday morning, and well, actually X parent picks them up on a Monday evening, or X person teaches them on that first lesson, what happens in there? Oh, there's been a pattern of behavior incidents in the past, and you kind of have the data there to piece those stories together. So if we can sell based on the stories, and because actually the people that work in schools are there because they want the best for the pupils. So if we can tailor those stories around how can this improve the outcomes for your pupils and make your life easier at the same time, right? So you've kind of got then actually we tend to be onto a winner. And we really, everybody here really believes in the product. We really believe in what we do, and our product team are really invested in continuous improvement. So I think you guys know that feeling of when you're really passionate about something, that sale becomes much easier as well, because you can talk about it forever. And so I think that really helps, that painting that picture and telling that.
So how are you guys painting the picture? Like actually have, like the mechanics of it, are you and measuring who's, you know, who's really engaged and who's not? What is your protocol for that? Are you talking about onboarding sessions or hosting flyers on the bulletin board in the school classrooms? Like what's the tactics?
Yeah. That really, you know, that level of engagement can really vary. And we've been on quite a journey here with trying to ensure that our customers engage. And we've actually just in the last week completely relaunched our whole customer education offering. We have a really comprehensive customer education offering, headed up by my colleague Claire, and what she's put together is a really excellent and extensive suite of online learning materials that customer can access.
So there's on demand, you're saying, right?
So we've got on demand learning, and we have a really excellent, I would say, world class onboarding service here. Especially, we have a brilliant digital onboarding service. So, you know, led by a bunch of journeys that we've built in Gainsight and refined, that ensures that the customer is being prompted continuously. They know where to go for these materials, and during that onboarding, they know what to do at what point. So things are kind of broken down. I think sometimes the danger of online learning materials, and if I think about my experiences with other platforms that we use here, it can be that you're quite, you know, overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. You know, if you log into an X learning platform for big sales software, for example, like, here's all the hundreds of courses you could do. Where do I begin other than video one? You know, so we really try and break that down, guide the customer through their kind of, here's the things you need to do when you're beginning on the platform, etc. So, and then we can measure all that in the back end too, and share that with the customer.
John, I just realized I remembered now why Christy skipped this episode.
Why is that?
Because Zoe's a Gainsight customer. She's not a client success. That's why.
Man.
She was boycotting us this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love this. And I, again, like, I just really love this kind of, it seems like it's a niche industry, but it's pervasive around the entire world. Education is huge, right?
Sure.
And those are the ones that are like kind of those aha moments of like, yeah, this is like a digital transformation that we're in. So when you have, what does account management, what is the umbrella under?
Again, he wants to know what is account management. I know. John, no, I mean, we really got to Google this stuff.
Question. I know, right?
I just want to know what the reporting structure is. Like, do you have onboarding managers? Do you have CSMs? Do you have sales? Like,
yeah, what does your pod look like?
Yeah, what is your pod?
Good question. And
what's in your pod?
The night before. So what's in my pod? So at the moment, I have a team of account managers who are split into, actually, this is more complicated, but I work alongside a colleague who manages our enterprise and key account managers. I manage our scale team, if you like. So that's a group of 8 people, 2 team leads in there. And they manage the majority, so around 70% of our accounts, shared together, shared target, shared reward for the team as well. There's a little extra bit to my pod that's about partner success and measuring the success of our schools who take their help desk support, their technical support from other partner companies that we have agreements with. And I'll go into this in a little bit more detail shortly, but we're just in the process of launching a discrete CS team. So I've just
she doesn't want to admit it. She doesn't want to admit that she's putting CS together there.
Well, discrete. Well, so this is in the back end, I assume, right?
So yeah. And actually you were asking at the start, like, what does account management mean? What does that include for us? Well, for as long as I've been here, it's been completely hybrid job. So it's been commercial, account growth, and customer success. And, you know, no spoilers, but that's really hard to do. for a long time.
Yes.
It's kind of fine. You know, when I joined, we had a couple of hundred accounts. We had two or three account managers. Fine. We're now in a world where, you know, we have 6,000 plus accounts. We've got like 18 or so in the account management team, and we've got really varying segments, varying sizes of customers, and it's really hard to do. And
what are the most challenging parts of that, Zoe, as you grew?
So I think we made a really concerted effort to split the team out into that kind of enterprise level and the scaled team. So I've gone off on a real focus on digital and sort of that desk-based pooled account management model and hopefully the CS bit. But do you know what? Being able to manage both of them at the same time from the same people has proved really, really challenging. And what I ended up doing and around December time, I sort of did a point in time analysis of how the team was spending their time. So I sat with a variety of my account managers for several hours at a time and really just looked what they were doing and how they were utilizing their time. I sort of done that very top level. They work out of Zendesk. I can see what their, you know, what their efficiencies like, their engagement, their email quality, for example, all those things, their touch rate, whether they're being efficient and using macros, all those kind of things. But actually knowing what they're doing day to day, I really couldn't get a handle on. So I did that and broke that down. And what was really obvious, no matter who I sat with, was they were spending the majority of their time on anything that related to an opportunity where they could close out revenue. Mm.
So growth, yeah.
It was account growth. And I couldn't fault them for that, in that they have a huge revenue target to hit and they're rewarded on that, right? So of course that's going to take their focus. And there's a lot to work on there too. So they organically have a lot to work on as well as trying to find some white space, but mostly organically. So that was most of their time, plus a bunch of admin things and process things that have also, to your question before, Josh, like what's been hard as you've grown, process systems, none of the surprising things there.
What was the loss in they're spending so much time on the growth part of things, which makes sense because that's where the incentives are.
Sure.
What was the impact of, I don't want to use the word neglect, but spending less time?
You've used it.
I don't want to use it, but I've used it. Yeah. What was the impact of that though? The neglect on the CS part?
The neglect on the CS part is, and as an aside, we're in a lucky world where churn has been really low here. But I know it's not going to maintain as low as it's been, and we can't get complacent on that. So I think we're more concerned about what the effect will be and what the impact will be longer term. We're starting to see, though, like those sort of levels of customer risks increasing and that risk management feeling very reactive. You know, sometimes just being completely sideswiped by customer service notice, and we just really didn't see that coming. And we really just weren't spending enough time on looking at customer health, spotting those trends and being proactive. And, you know, we know the journey that our customers go on, you know, particular types of our customers, for example, a few months in, will fall deeply into a pit of despair. You know, this is awful. I've got so much to learn. I've got no time to do it. This is horrible. And then they're going to claw their way back out of it within their first year on Arbor. And actually we really could be doing so much in that time, you know, and at scale too, right? You know, we've got a great community platform that we've launched in the last few months. We've got this community education, customer education program. But we just didn't have the team of people sitting behind it to say, you know what, we know this always happens. Let's build a webinar program, free content that can go and catch those people and kind of save them from getting to the point where they become a risk that we're not aware of happening. Let's utilize more of that product usage and that health data within Gainsight to really work proactively. So what we're trying to do now is having appointed to two technical CSMs internally who know the product really well. They start in a couple of months' time. I really want to work with them probably before they're really in post, actually, to identify groups of customers that we're going to focus on, going to target, and really hopefully see some big impact for some work they can do, again, hopefully at scale too.
That's great.
Yeah, no worries. So I don't know if I ever answered your first question.
No, you did. Maybe, no. And I don't mean like, I didn't mean like the definition of account management, Josh. I meant the, you know, head of account management. Those titles mean so many things, right? Yeah. And the heart of what you're talking about is the same kind of pillars that everybody focuses on. It's retention, it's growth, and you know, it's health, right? So we're looking at these things. I guess looking forward for this year, you're talking about expanding outside of your regions into kind of new opportunities. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do you see, or I guess what's one of the challenges that you're really trying to focus on from the scale standpoint? Going into, you know, kind of the future of the rest of this year?
Yeah, that it's a really great question because it's on my mind a lot.
Thank you.
Again, you're welcome.
again, words of affirmation is great for me. So
it only
we're doing
took
great.
50 okay. episodes, John, for somebody to say that.
Somebody say it for good. Yeah.
Okay, I'll throw one more in before we finish. big challenges for us are kind of the unknown, right? And if we look at potentially branching into, for example, Wales, you know, really basic top level, they speak a different language there. You know, they use different assessment systems, they use different, you know, they might track their pupils differently, they'll have different requirements. So there's like really fundamental product level things that we've obviously got to prepare for, that the product team are thinking about. Thinking about then the customer, you know, the onboarding journey obviously would need adapting. We've got things like help center content, our whole help desk team, how does all of that stuff look? And then within my team, what does it even mean to account manage customers somewhere else? And for me, the bigger challenge is actually not necessarily branching out into a different region or a different country. The challenge that I'm thinking about as the year unfolds is our portfolio is growing. And so how do we go about managing these different businesses within our portfolio, these different products, sorry, within our portfolio? And what does that mean for my team? You know, do my team manage all of that and focus on cross-sell? Do we want to, and we've not nailed down that whole structure operationally at all. So that's a bigger thing for me is, you know, if all of our customers are on product A, do we also want to focus in my team on getting them to use product B, C, and D? And how do we go about doing that? And do my team become more and more commercial and focused on selling those products? Or do my team focus just on renewing the product they've got, selling a few more services around it, doing both of those things? We've got quite a lot of mapping out to do there.
Yeah.
And Zoe, you're also now running the CS team within that has been carved out from the account management team. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah. So they start in a couple of months. So I've appointed them. They start in April.
I love that you called them discrete CS, and I want to hear. I love it, and I have like an idea, like an intuition to where you're going with this. But I would love to hear. I mean, even just using that term, like, how did you prepare these folks to come in? And are you following traditional CS models, or is it, you know, kind of getting a little bit of a switch for your market?
Actually, hold on, time out. I want to, because John, she doesn't have these guys in place for another. These guys and gals, these people in place for another 2 months. So I'm actually curious, like, what are you doing to prep for bringing them in? Similar question to John, but like, how
great
are
question,
you thinking
Josh.
About? Great question. Great. I think it was a fantastic question. But how are you thinking about, like, what are the things on your plate right now, the questions that you have and like your tasks to do while you bring them in?
Yeah, I need to think about at the moment how to differentiate. So if I'm going to be as bold as to say a discrete team, right? I need to make sure that both internally and externally, the remit of these teams is really clear. So if you're a customer, how do you know who to contact for what? Yeah. What does that cadence look like? And again, the internal part's important too, because I've kind of got a feeling if I don't do that right internally, people just get questions addressed to everybody within both teams, right?
Are you worried, Zoe, that it might, by virtue of bringing in having a separate team, there's all the merits of it. Are you worried that account management may be, for lack of a better word, shielded from some of the customer interaction, not have as much of a pulse on the voice of the customer, as it were?
Yeah, I think it's a really important point. And I think that their contact with the customer will reduce. And the point about really not being, you know, having their finger on the pulse of that is true. I think when you asked about what's sort of on my plate to prepare, one of the other things is about understanding the cadence of how the two teams will have to interact really effectively. Because if a key focus for the account management team is about renewals and ensuring our current customer base renews their contract with us, they're going to have to absolutely understand the current health of that customer and what's happened with them. So I haven't quite mapped that out, but we've got to really nail that down really effectively. At the moment, a lot of the team are trying to have really regular reviews, business reviews with customers. In account management, that over time will steadily start to reduce. And they'll likely have an annual review with the customer where they focus on renewal, account growth, etc. And the customer success managers will focus on usage, adoption, health, and ensuring, of course, they've agreed on customer outcomes and achieving those outcomes. So I think you're right. The contact with the customer will likely reduce. Whether they would be worried about that, I'm not sure. I think they really feel like they're spinning a lot of plates at the moment. So I don't think they or some of them may be worried about it. And I think there's probably going to be a bit of a natural split in their skill set as well, as the two teams sort of embed and form. But yeah, the key piece is about how those two teams interact for me.
Yeah, when you even said it, you know, when you did your listening sessions with your team, you found that most of them were focusing on the growth and the AMs were sitting in this role that is their natural alignment. And to the thing that you said at the very beginning of this episode is like, what are you good at? What are you doing really, really well? And then let's start building out processes and segments that support that so that the AMs can focus on this part of the business, but then this thing that's kind of not had the attention that maybe it's needed or, you know, has been fine but could be better, let's bring somebody else in.
Yeah, for sure.
I love that. Well, we can get into like, you know, macroeconomic, you know, European Labor Party, Keir Starmer policy discussions if you'd like.
Brexit
or no? Yeah. What does post-Brexit London look like in a labor-led education system? I'm kidding. You don't have to answer that.
Yeah, I mean,
please don't.
I could, but I won't.
That's a whole other podcast.
It's a whole other podcast for sure. Right.
Yeah. Where do you go to learn this type of stuff when it comes to your organizational? Like, who are you listening to? Who are you learning from outside of education? Is there somebody that you listen to or, you know, a framework that you're following or that you're kind of aspired to?
John still really wants to understand what account management
is. Oh my God, Josh.
Look, we can pick that up offline, John. I can't promise to help you though. I mentioned to you at the beginning, I love to learn and I'm really kind of hungry to do that. And I think probably sometimes to the annoyance of my colleagues, I absolutely love to network with people and learn from colleagues. And I'm very, very keen to do that outside of education and outside of edtech. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you become really siloed and really blinkered in your view. So, you know, yes, internally, I have excellent colleagues to learn from. And in fact, I feel really lucky that the group of managers within our customer team that I work with And my boss that I work with, I learn loads from all the time. They're a really capable bunch of people. So that's excellent as like a really good starting point for me. They've all come in from various different places and offer so much. So I love that. And then I also, you know, I'm a bit of a sucker for LinkedIn and, you know, following various people on LinkedIn, reading what they've got to post about regularly, listening to podcasts. I find events like, so yeah, we're Gainsight users here. We've been to Gainsight Pulse Conference as a team the last couple of years. That's an excellent event just to meet up with other people in the industry, and by industry, just SaaS as a whole. So right. You kind of getting a whole heap of knowledge and information and actually finding that, yes, schools, education, and that maybe the way we work sometimes can be niche. The majority of it is the same. We're trying to solve the same problem. We're all hitting the same snags when we're trying to scale. You know, engagement still hits the same issues. We're still trying to engage with the right people at C-suite. So I really like that level of engagement with varying different people, sometimes for a bit of reassurance, but certainly to learn lots from. And then various books and things to pick up. So yeah, as a Gainsight user, Nick Mess has always got all sorts to post on. You know, follow people like Christy on LinkedIn, and of course you, Josh, and your team. And there's loads to read about all the time. So yeah, I'm the one constantly scrolling, screenshotting stuff, sharing it with my team. And yeah, I feel lucky to be passionate and excited about it. So it doesn't feel like hard work. You know, I'll happily do that on an evening because it's interesting to me. So, and there's loads out there now.
There is. Great. Yep. I love it. That's good. Well, Josh, she answered all my questions.
That's all I got. I mean, should we ask her some more questions about the UK and the geographical breakdown of all the countries there?
I don't need to hear that.
I also don't know if I can answer that. So let's not.
I did learn last night from my girlfriend, Jessica, that Kensington Palace is where William and
Kate.
Oh my God. I'm turning 40 in a month. And that was the first sign of it right there.
Yeah.
I heard that I learned that's where William and Kate live. I wasn't aware of that before. So we can.
There you go, right?
We can leave it on that. Yeah. Note.
Yeah, okay, that's a great, that's such an impactful statement, Josh. I'm so glad that you shared that with us.
And my ex-girlfriends, now's the real podcast. Now it begins. Her cousins were the flower girls in Harry and Meghan's wedding. And if you look online at the wedding photo, the official wedding photo of the family afterwards, everybody's so dapper and regal. And then you have these two, like, beautiful half Indian girls that are there. It's like, you know, which one is not one, you know, which one of these is not one of the other, right? Yeah. And
outside, so on your quest to be like what, 15th in line?
It's all part of. Secession? I keep on leveling closer and closer to royalty. Yeah.
No, that's good.
Good. Okay. On that note, have a great day, everybody. Thank you, Zoe. It was great hearing your story, and best of wishes to you and Arbor as you guys continue to grow. Yeah, two different countries.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.